You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome to the third and final hour of this, the first live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program for 2014. Again, folks, James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you, coming to you live from our flagship AM station in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliates of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I want to one more time apologize for the very brief and very rare technical difficulties that impacted our internet simulcast at the very top of the show. I think we lost the first segment, but we made up for it in the second hour by basically saying everything we said again. But folks, those things happen in live radio. So anyway, listen, exciting stuff. I want to share with you that December, the fourth quarter fundraising drive was successful. There's something, Keith, very uncanny, almost supernatural about our audience, and that is that each time we run these essential and critical fundraising appeals each quarter, we get within a few hundred dollars, it seems, exactly what we need. And there's no way that the audience can tell how much others have given. And it seems like every year, a couple of times we may fall a little short, and then we might have a couple of quarters where we get a little more. But on the whole, we get exactly what we need, just enough to make it for the next 3 months, because we have these appeals, of course, to fund the show each quarter. And so by the end of the quarter, we're ready for another appeal to keep the wheels on the wagon here. But we always get just enough. And I saw, Keith, that the Southern Poverty Law Center was also having a fundraising drive in December, and they had a single donor that was matching everything they received up to $800,000. Up to $800,000, and I would tell you what we raised, but I would have to admit it sheepishly when compared to something like that. I mean, it was less than $5,000, but it keeps us on the air, and it's exactly what we need. And with that tiny bit of money, which God bless you folks for giving it, because without it, we wouldn't be here at all. And $100 to us is a lot of money, and so when people contribute $100 or $200, even $25, it all goes into the kitty. And it keeps us on for months at a time. But with that little bit of money compared to what our enemies raise, we have produced a top 10 radio show. We're in the top 10 right now online, again, not counting the AM/FM affiliates and the listeners on those outlets. And we have also been minted as a top 100 conservative news site by Alexa. Now, I want to be very clear that this is not... This list is objective. It's based on Alexa rankings, and it's not opinion. It's fact.
It's not a conservative.
There are over 861 million websites online in the world today on the internet. 861 million. The Political Cesspool ranks in the top one-tenth of 1% of websites globally. And we were, again, listed in the top 100 conservative websites, news sites on the internet, in addition to being the top 10 radio show. And we do it all with not even to say what we raise is even a fraction of what the SPLC raises or these other media outlets is an insult to fractions.
I tell you, our fundraising efforts are reminiscent of Jesus feeding the 5,000 with three loaves of bread and three fish or whatever it was. but that is... you know, beside the point, really. We find enough somehow through divine providence to keep going, and we thank all of our contributors. No amount is too little. We appreciate everyone's effort, and quite frankly, all those little efforts brought together are enough to sustain us, and we thank you. Without you, our listening audience, we couldn't do this. On the other hand, getting to what is, you know, the the fact that we are, I think, number 98 on an unbiased assessment of the top websites in the world is for conservatives, okay? And this is not done by a conservative group. This is by an objective, probably, if anything, left-leaning group, Alexia. That, again, tells you the disproportionate influence that this little radio program, this little website, casts on public opinion. And I don't think it's because we're that superior to other people. It's just that we are that fearless, and we'll talk about the things that other people whisper about behind cupped hands at cocktail parties. We give you a steady diet of 200-proof of moonshine, as it were, each and every week, and people are hungry and thirsty for this type of information. The more the left and the more the establishment tries to suppress information, the more valuable and cherished it becomes. That is the secret to our success. Like I said before, give light and the people shall find their own way. And as the Bible says, ye shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. We're all about setting people free here at the Political Cesspool.
And of course, Keith, we've been talking for a couple of months now about our position in the top 10 radio show rankings online. And I say it, I guess, every week, not to pat ourselves on the back, but folks, we're patting you on the back, because anything, any accomplishments that we've garnered is a result of those who listen to this show and support it and pray for us. So, folks, we're patting you on the back when we make mention of our rankings there. But to be in the, you know, top 10 radio, top 100 conservative websites, according to Alexa, and that Alexa rating was passed on to me by our friend Ken Gividen of the Daily Ken. And let me tell you, you know, as Keith mentioned, we barely made that top 100 cutoff. I think we were number 98. But let me tell you some of the people, or the other websites, rather, and entities that are listed in that top 100 list with us. You're talking about Fox News, Drudge, The Wall Street Journal, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Breitbart, Newsmax, WorldNet Daily, The National Review, Washington Times, The Weekly Standard. Now, certainly not all of these are truly conservative entities, but for whatever reason, they were counted as such by Alexa, and we were in there too with the big boys, with Weekly Standard and Breitbart and Newsmax, WorldNet Daily, Fox News, Hannity, and O'Reilly's personal websites. That's the company we want to keep, and that's where we are as a radio show, and now that's where we are as a website. Folks don't always really get into it on the comment section of our blog, I've noticed, but the traffic is there. We knew the traffic was there. We can monitor our own internal traffic, but to know that we rank that highly on this budget, folks, be very proud of that as we start this new year. Again, all of this just adds up to the fact that our influence is growing and should continue to grow.
I guess what it shows in final analysis is that money isn't everything. We have disproportionate influence on a shoestring budget because we tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth on taboo topics. If you want that type of information, tell your friends and neighbors about the Political Cesspool.
When we come back, Keith has got stacks and stacks of paper. I'm going to let Keith tell you what we're going to be talking about for the remainder of the hour when we return. It's going to be good, folks. I guarantee you that.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, folks, welcome back. Keith's got a lot of news for us, and we're going to get to that directly. I mentioned there in the last segment, of course, that the fundraising drive in December was a success. By the hair of its chinny chin chin, we got everything we needed to keep us financially solvent and to meet our operating expenses for the next couple of months, and then we'll go into that first quarter fundraising drive, and it'll be equally crucial. But for all of those who did contribute at the appropriate levels, you will be receiving a gift package, thank you package from us, and those are going to ship out next week. We'd like to have sent them out already, but we're waiting on one final piece to come in that needs to go in there, so stay tuned for that and be looking in your mailbox, I guess, here in a few days. Today's January 4th. January 4th is a day that has some great significance to me. It was 10 years ago tonight, Keith, at this very moment, I was watching Frankie Valli perform in Clearwater, Florida, at Ruth Eckerd Hall. So, you know, some things you never forget. And in a very, it's really hard to rank these two things. There was Frankie at Ruth Eckerd 10 years ago tonight. 9 years ago tonight, I proposed to my wife at the footsteps of Cinderella's Castle, also there in the Orlando area, so all good things happened there. I guess in all honesty, the proposal was a little more significant, but those two things happened on this day, 9 and 10 years ago, respectively. Tonight, I'm hosting the show on January 4th, so that's special. January 6th, a special day to you, right, Keith? Why don't you tell the folks why, and then tell us what they can expect for the remainder of the hour.
Well, January the 6th, 1951, was a date of my nativity, or in other words, my birthday, and there may be an old picture of me that crops up on our website. You'll have to check in to make sure about that on Monday, January the 6th. Now, let's get into the meat, okay? We've got several articles here that we feel we need to bring to the attention of the listening audience. One is on Sigmund Freud. Another is on the Jewish Christmas soundtrack. We've all been listening to Christmas carols over the past month or so, and most people are not aware that most of these songs were written not by Christians, but by Jews, And we're going to get into what those songs are and how they subvert the true meaning of Christmas. Then thirdly, we're going to talk about Obama's dysfunctional past. This is information that is not readily available, is more or less suppressed by the mainstream media. And then finally, if we can get around to it, we're going to talk about the Hillary's background. We've talked about Obama's background. Then we'll talk about Hillary's background as well, since it looks like she is leading the pack for Democratic frontrunners for president in the next election, 2016. So let's take it away, James, with Sigmund Freud.
Well, Keith's brought in an article here from the Wall Street Journal, and I'm going to set the stage for him by reading a couple of passages that he's highlighted for me, and we're going to let him make sense of it all. This article about Sigmund Freud is entitled 100 Years of Freud in America. Sigmund Freud hated America, the story reads. He couldn't stand being called Sigmund by his informal hosts. He believed that Americans had channeled their sexuality in an unhealthy obsession with money, and he seethed at his own need for the dollars that we had in such unseemly abundance. It's not sad, he wrote to a German friend after World War I, that we are materially dependent on these savages who are not a better class of human beings. But while Freud loathed all things American except its currency, the feeling was anything but mutual. No nation outside of Germany and Austria was more hospitable to psychoanalysis than America, notes Mark Edmondson in The Death of Sigmund Freud, a book that was published in 2007. Freud may have even anticipated with eagerness the things with which Americans would embrace his theories. We are bringing them the plague, he reportedly told colleagues when disembarking in New York, and they don't even know it. Freud made that fateful trip to New York. Freud made that fateful trip to the New World. He so thoroughly despised 100 years ago this month, carrying with him the intellectual equivalent of an alien species that would run riot in the wildly favorable climate of opinion in its new home. He traveled from Europe by steamship with Carl Jung and Sandor Ferenczi, the three of them psychoanalyzing one another en route. When they arrived, they spent several days touring Chinatown, Coney Island, and other New York sites. Okay, Keith, why did I read that?
We read it because Sigmund Freud was Jewish and is a signal, perfect example of how Jews got to be at the top of various disciplines and professions and basically subverted Western culture and academic topics like psychology in the case of Freud or anthropology in the case of Franz Boas into being a weapon that the left could use to assail traditional Western culture and civilization. Now, Sigmund Freud despised the West. He despised the Gentiles that dominated society at that time in America and the rest of the New World. And he was offended that they were wealthier than him. When he talks about an inferior race, he's talking about white Gentiles being inferior to Jews like himself and the person he was speaking to. A lot of people don't realize that Sigmund Freud was a Jew. In fact, we've all been basically scared to make that type of inquiry by the mainstream media. Next to being called a racist, about the worst thing that you can be called in modern day America is an anti-Semite, which means anyone who is interested in the Jewishness of particular people, leading figures, etc. This is because the mainstream establishment wants Jews to hide under the umbrella of being white people. They don't want you to see, for example, that just about 90% of the hosting staff for ESPN, the sports cable network, that passes for white is actually Jewish. People like Steve Levy, Linda Cohn, who is also Jewish. You know, there are so many of these people, Tony Kornheiser. All of these people are actually Jewish, and when you back out the Jews, like we said earlier in the program, from these numbers, you start to get an idea of just how vastly underrepresented white Gentiles are in positions of power and influence. Well, Freud is particularly important. Why is Freud particularly important? He's particularly important because his ideas would grow into a kind of orthodoxy in America, becoming a staple in medical training and psychiatry and permeating the larger culture. By the 1950s, Freudian therapy was almost commonplace for those who could afford it. In other words, the elite just thought it was the grooviest thing to sit on a psychologist's couch or a psychiatrist's couch and babble about themselves to some so-called expert who was going to ferret out the true meaning of their life and also the reason why they were so screwed up. Okay, this idea that Freud popularized was that you could cure mental illness by talking about it, which of course is absurd, and of course now is not the way that mental illness is treated. Mental illness is treated with medication and surgeries and things like this if it's severe enough. Neuroses, which are basically people that neuroses are people that are not fully adapted, are dissatisfied with their life or their position in society, and they want to do something about it. But Freud was particularly influential as being part of the nexus that created cultural Marxism, which was Marx and Freud blended together. We'll give you more on that on the other side of this break after a word from our sponsor.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend.
All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. You know it's live radio when I have to admit to you that we are not yet prepared to continue tonight's broadcast because Keith Alexander has left the studio. He has ventured down the hall and is currently in the bathroom. And when Keith finishes his and here he is now. I had to tell him where you were, Keith. I let him know that you had taken a trip to the men's room, and now he's back so we can keep going.
I was powdering my nose, folks. But anyway, let's get back to Sigmund Freud. Why is Sigmund Freud important? Well, cultural Marxism, which is the type of applied Marxism that actually thrives today and is responsible for the movement that we generally identify as liberalism, is said to be a fusion of Marx and Freud. Freud and Freudian analysis was used to basically usher in a regime of psychological conditioning, which is used on the masses to this day with a terrifying effect. This is why public opinion has shifted so radically over the past 70 years in the leftward direction. It's because of this psychoanalytical analysis that Freud ushered in. Freud was not an egalitarian. He was a Jewish supremacist. He despised America and white Gentile American society. And nonetheless, he was embraced and revered almost like he was a god in America, which he found to be extremely amusing. He was one of the people that ushered in two basic ideas that are foundational to the left. One is that sex is the secret reason for almost all human behavior. This raising sex to a pedestal as the primary motivator of human behavior is part of the destruction of these typical moral standards of the West. If everything is reducible to sex, then sex somehow takes on this increased importance, and sex is not considered to be base. It's not considered to be a force to be tamed. It's considered to be the primary motivating factor of just about any behavior, no matter how altruistic or how good. It's a way of basically putting down the goodness and the typical religious instincts of the West and subordinating them to a base drive. That's one thing. The other thing besides sex is it ushered in this cult of victimization, that people are victims of forces larger than themselves, that people are not in charge of their own destinies. This was another one of the fundamental teachings of Freudianism. Now, and also the idea that talking things out had some type of curative effect. All of these things have worked to help cultural Marxism take over. One of the next to the Long March through the Institutions, the primary technique used by cultural Marxism to gain control is called the therapeutic state. We see this all the time. People are not evil, they are sick. And if you have a conservative thought in your mind, then that is proof positive of your sickness. And you need to be cured, quote-unquote, of this base idea. And this is where you go for sensitivity sessions at your business if you make a comment that is too true and too candid about another race or about another gender or whatever. They have this radical egalitarian mindset. Everybody is the same. All people are equal. And there's no amount of evidence to the contrary that will convince them that they're not right. And if you express a countervailing position, then you will be harried into some sensitivity session with the implicit threat that if the sensitivity training doesn't take, you're going to be out on the street looking for a job. This type of politically correct pressure has had a magical effect on making people cowardly about telling the truth on topics that the left would rather not have to encounter the truth on, James.
People may be wondering why Sigmund Freud is a topic of conversation tonight on the Political Cesspool radio program, and probably a couple of reasons for that. I'll let Keith give you those, but one that comes to my mind is the fact, and we won't mention this person's name or where he's from, but a longtime fan of the show, who is also, I believe it was a psychiatrist, right, Keith, who we met for lunch in December, and he seemed to be quite interested with Keith's commentary, at least in passing, on the topic of Freud, and I know you've mentioned it at least once or twice in previous broadcasts over the years, Keith, and we have been planning on talking more about that in depth because this loyal listener was interested in that topic and Keith's take on it, and with the busy shows that we've had in December, this was the first opportunity that presented itself to bring this back to the forefront, and what other reasons were there than that, Keith?
Well, that's the primary one. Ron, this one's for you. Like, this bud's for you. Ron, this particular segment is for you on Freud. Freud is one of the primary movers and shakers of the change towards liberalism that has afflicted the left. Franz Boas is another. He was the head of, or the disciple of modern anthropology, which basically is he transformed what was before a hard science as expounded upon and taught by people like Madison Grant into basically the softest and squishiest of social sciences. All you have to know in order to get an A in most anthropology courses in college today is that we have much to learn from primitive cultures, and all cultures are of equal validity, and we an equal amount of wisdom at their core, and consequently, no one should feel that any particular culture is superior to another. That's why we study all of these primitive cultures so exhaustively, because they are even more saturated with wisdom than, in particular, Western European civilization and culture.
I'm looking here. This is a complete departure from everything that you were talking about, Keith, but I'm looking here. Again, folks, forgive me for congratulating you for our position in the ratings tonight, but I see that a replay of a Glenn Beck show, these ratings audit the traffic that is coming in to shows, whether they are live or a rebroadcast. And so, of course, we're live, but Beck is a rebroadcast tonight. And I was thinking about the fact that he's also listed on that top 100 conservative websites, Keith. And Glenn Beck, I mean, first of all, this guy is mentally ill. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. If you watched his behavior at the Martin Luther King rally, or it was a rally for freedom or whatever, and then he just started worshiping Martin Luther King there. But he went out this week and was saying that hetero fascists disgust him, or something to that extent, or something of that gist, that he was disgusted by the hetero fascists, which means that, you know, you can be against gay marriage, but you better not be against it too strongly. Yes, basically something like that. And what passes for conservative talk and conservative commentary in print is, well, Keith, you tell them what it is. I'm getting upset over here.
It's inane babble and non sequitur. The fact that they always bend a knee. You know, what was the old hymn, every knee shall bow? Well, the left expects every knee to bow towards liberalism. So consequently, mainstream so-called conservative pundits like Glenn Beck are always bending their knee, genuflecting towards the liberal idols that have been set before all of us to worship. that's where we differ from the Glenn Becks and the Bill O'Reillys and the Sean Hannitys of the world.
I must admit, I was signing a book also there in that last segment when I was looking at the ranking, signing a book, listening to you, monitoring how much time we have to the next break. It's a juggling act here to produce a live show and to host it and all this stuff that goes into it. But I want to tell Alan in Georgia that we have signed his book, actually signed it on the air. Keith signed his during the commercial break. This listener in Georgia, folks, I'll tell you, he gave a very generous contribution to the fundraising drive last December. Also been a longtime listener of the program. He asked for a signed copy of my book, and he wanted Keith to sign it as well. So Keith signed it in the commercial break. I was signing it live on the air there, and you caught me with my pants down, figuratively speaking here, of course. I got to be more professional. What can I say? I'm a multitasker, though. Sigmund Freud would appreciate that. All right, we got to take a break. According to Freud, right, all of the problems were a result of your father's molestation. If you had any problem at all or any upsetness, your father must have molested you or something like that. We got to take a break.
A backpack is more than just a bag. It's a statement. Whether you're a student or professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Would you like being an insider? Would you like getting exclusive access to prizes and better deals? Would you like some help in making sure you and your loved ones are prepared for the next disaster or emergency? If you answered yes to any of these, here's your simple solution. Join Freeze Dry Guy's Survival Insider Club. Not only is your membership free, you get $10 in survival bucks just for signing up. Then you save at least 10% on purchases, plus enjoy insider access to specials, prizes, and other exclusive offers. Since 1970, veteran-owned Freeze Dry Guy has been your trusted source for long-lasting, easy-to-make freeze-dried food and dehydrated food, perfect for emergency preparedness, RV travel, and outdoor needs from camping to sailing. Enjoy life as a survival insider. Call Freeze Dry Guy now at 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, folks. Last segment of the first show of the new year here in the Political Cesspool. Keith Alexander has been with us for some extended play tonight, staying with me from start to finish, reel to reel, for this, the live show. for January 4th. We're going to have some great shows for you in January, really the entire year. I think they're all great. Coming up in just a couple of weeks, I will finally be able to give you all of the behind-the-scenes details pertaining to my filming of this television series that we've been talking about, or not talking about a lot because there's not been a lot I could say about it up until this point. But we've mentioned, of course, the fact that it did happen and that it's going to have a great audience, a large audience. And we are going to give you all the details about that a little later on this month. This program will premiere in January, and it will air for a few weeks, and it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to this, and I'll tell you everything about what went down and give you the all access to my experience a little later on when it is appropriate for me to do so. That being said, Eddie the Bomber Deer Miller will be you know, when you get tongue-tied in live radio, there's just no editing that. Eddie the Bombardier Miller will be back with us live next week. But first, Keith has for us a final Christmas-related story. Keith, what is it?
Well, we've all been listening to Christmas music over the past month, and now that it's all over with for this year, it's probably time to take a retrospective look at this and make some observations. There is a list of the top 10 Christmas season songs written in the 20th century. Of course, the 20th century would include the second great wave of immigration when Jews came to America in significant numbers for the first time between 1890 and 1920. Well, not surprisingly, 9 out of 10 of these top 10 songs were written by Jewish songwriters, lyricists, and musicians. Let's just go over the list. This is from Tablet Magazine, which is a Jewish publication. So this is not anti-Jewish. This is from the horse's mouth. First, The Christmas Waltz, music and lyrics by Sammy Kahn and Julie Stein. Silver Bells, music by Jay Livingston, lyrics by Ray Evans. 8, Winter Wonderland, music by Felix Benaud. 7, Santa Baby, music and lyrics by Joan Ellen Javits and Philip Springer. 6, Sleigh Ride, lyrics by Mitchell Parrish, and Mitchell Parrish's real name is Michael Hyman Pashlinsky from Lithuania. I'll Be Home for Christmas, music by Buck Ram, lyrics by Walter Kent. You Got My Love to Keep Me... I've Got Your Love to Keep Me Warm, music and lyrics by Irving Berlin. Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow is number 3, music lyrics by Sammy Kahn, music by Julie Stein. 2, The Christmas Song, music and lyrics by Mel Torme and Bob Wells. And number 1 is White Christmas, music and lyrics by Irving Berlin. Only one of those top 10 songs, The Christmas Song, written by Mel Torme and Bob Wells, was written by a non-Jew. Now, why is this significant? Well, this has been one of the results of this predominance of Jewish songwriting skill being used to define our holidays is the de-Christianizing of Christmas. In fact, the same thing has happened with Easter. Easter and Christmas are the two holidays that celebrate the divinity of Christ, the divinity that's at the very heart of the Jewish rejection of Christianity. And what does Irving Berlin do? He de-Christs them, both. Easter, he turns into a fashion show. Easter Parade was his song. And Christmas, he turned into a holiday about snow, White Christmas. No mention of the reason for the season, which is Christ. In fact, if you want to listen to a Christmas song that has something to do with the real reason for the season, the birth of Jesus Christ, you basically have to go into the 19th century and even further back than that to listen to old Christmas carols from England, Germany, and elsewhere on the European continent. Now, this is typical Jewish subversion. If you ask me, basically, they have insisted, just like the ADL insists, that Christmas isn't to be about Christ or about Christianity. 1.7% of the population, that's what Jews represent in America today, basically wield a veto over what the vast majority of Americans who are Christians or have a Christian background want celebrated. We find billboards in Times Square saying, take the Christ out of Christmas. We reported on that earlier this year. We are always listening to, are hearing about the ADL bringing some type of lawsuit against some small government entity, some town or county or whatnot, telling them they've got to remove a nativity scene from their courthouse square. Meanwhile, at the White House, the presidential home for the U.S. president in Washington, D.C., there is no Christian nativity scene, but there is a menorah, which is illustrative of the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah, which also happens in December. This shows you the disproportionate power and influence that Jews wield on American culture generally, and this Jewish Christmas soundtrack is something that most people aren't aware of, but need to be aware of. When you become aware of the facts, the truth sets you free, as the Bible says, James.
Yes, and I did put forth a little effort to confirm that that Jewish menorah appeared again this year as it had in years past, and it did indeed this year appear again on the White House lawn with a full dog and pony show at the first unveiling and lighting of the menorah, which again was so big it had to be erected by a crane. So we're talking, you know, and we covered in the War on Christmas segments this year during the month of December the fact that the military was stamping out nativity scenes as quickly as they could find them on their bases, whereas at the seat of power itself, the White House, what's good for the goose, again, Keith, is not good for the gander.
Right. Now let's move on, if we have enough time, to miss about Hillary Clinton, who appears to be the front runner for the Democratic candidacy for president in the next upcoming presidential election in 2016. If you happen to see Bill Clinton's 5-minute TV ad for Hillary, in which he introduces the commercial by saying he wants to share some things we may not know about Hillary's background, beware. Now, this is from Dick Morris, who used to be one of their aides. As I was there for most of their presidency and know them better than just about anyone, I offer a few corrections. Bill says, in law school, Hillary worked on legal services for the poor. The facts are Hillary's main extracurricular activity in law school was helping the Black Panthers on trial in Connecticut for torturing and killing a federal agent. She went to court every day as part of a law student monitoring committee trying to spot civil rights violations and develop grounds for appeal. Bill Clinton then says Hillary spent a year after graduation working on children's rights projects for poor kids. The facts are Hillary interned with Bob Trueheart, the head of the California Communist Party. She met Bob when he represented the Black Panthers and traveled all the way to San Francisco to take an internship with him. Bill then says Hillary could have written her own job ticket, but she turned down the lucrative job offer, all the lucrative job offers. The facts are she flunked the D.C. bar exam. Yes, flunked it. It is a matter of record, and only passed the Arkansas bar. She had no job offers in Arkansas. None, zero, nada. And only got hired by the University of Arkansas Law School at Fayetteville because Bill was already teaching there. She did not join the prestigious Rose Law Firm in Little Rock until Bill became Arkansas Attorney General and was made a partner only after he was elected Arkansas Governor. Bill then says President Carter appointed Hillary to the Legal Services Board of Directors and she became its chairman. The facts are these. The appointment was in exchange for Bill's support for Carter in his 1980 primary against Ted Kennedy. Hillary then became chairman in a coup in which she won a majority away from Carter's choice to be chairman. Bill then says she served, that's Hillary, on the board of the Arkansas Children's Hospital. The facts are, yes, she did. But her main board activity, not mentioned by Bill, was to sit on the Walmart board of directors for a substantial fee. She was silent about their labor and health care practices, which most in the left find deficient. Bill says Hillary didn't succeed in getting health care for all Americans in 1994, but she kept working at it and helped to create the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP is the acronym for that, that provides 5 million children with health insurance in America. The facts are Hillary had nothing to do with creating CHIP. It was included in the budget deal between Clinton and Republican Majority Leader Senator Trent Lott. I know, says Morris, I helped to negotiate the deal. The money came half from the budget deal and half from the Attorney General's tobacco settlement. Okay, folks, that's all we got on this tonight. We've enjoyed it. We look forward to talking with you next week. Keep the faith and remember that the political cesspool has your best interest at heart and we need your support.
For Keith Alexander and the rest of our staff and crew here in Memphis and at our network in Utah, I'm James Edwards. See you next week, everybody. God bless you.